Have you ever watched an apocalyptic sci-fi movie and wondered, could any of this really happen? I'm Carrie Bechet, and on Hypothetical, we explore what-if questions two ways, through speculative science fiction and through insight from the world's most brilliant scientists. And spoiler alert, your favorite sci-fi movies aren't nearly as far-fetched as you may think. Time travel with me into our possible futures on Hypothetical. New episodes every Tuesday, available on all podcast apps. That's Hypothetical, Hyperthetical. Come get some. See where
I live. IGN GameScoop. What's up, everybody? Welcome to IGN Game Scoop. I'm your host, Damon Hatfield. Joining me this week is Justin Davis Scoop. And Sam Claiborne.
Aim Coop.
It is a, yes, Aim Coop. It is a Scoop trio this week. Very busy day in the office. Lots of people are sick. Lots of people are out at events, playing games, heads down, working on features. So we have a little bit smaller group, but no less great a show for you this week. We're going to talk about God of War. I just God of War.
Have you used that one before?
No, I thought of that earlier today.
Okay, all right.
We're going to talk about Cuphead and other difficult games, notoriously difficult games. But first, Xbox Game Pass. Is it the future? Is it the future of video games? Some think it is. Microsoft has unveiled that all Microsoft Studios games going forward will be a part of Xbox Game Pass on release day. Xbox Game Pass is, of course, Microsoft's Netflix-like subscription service, which offers access to a selection of Xbox One and 360 games for a monthly fee. I think it's $10 a month.
Mm-hmm. $9.99.
And this starts with Sea of Thieves, which is out March 20th, but there's a closed beta going on now. Sea of Thieves is a $60 game. Mm-hmm. So,
and then it ends with that, because what else is coming out?
Well, okay, but there's also another, there's 100 games in Xbox Game Pass.
But the news is that there's just every new Microsoft game.
Every new Microsoft Studios game will be a part of Xbox Game Pass on release day. Seems like a pretty good value. $10 a month would get you access to Sea of Thieves and then this other 100 games.
And you still have to pay Games with Gold.
Well,
or I mean, you still have to pay for Xbox Live Gold.
You have to, or if you want to play online.
Yeah, if you want to play online.
Yeah, if you want to play online. Yeah, for sure.
So for Sea of Thieves, for instance.
For Sea of Thieves, with a big online game.
Yeah, so I mean, for them, it's like all great because they get the money for these games without going to retail, and they get probably Xbox Live subscriptions, which is a year. Mm-hmm. They get all that, and that's all good for them. It's really scary for retailers.
Scary for retailers.
For single-player games.
For single-player games.
So we've been talking about the $60 single-player game, and that was the whole topic of Scoop, you know, 2-3 weeks ago.
That's a good one.
If you release a $60 game that's on Xbox Game Pass, wouldn't people surely rather just pay $9.99, play mm-hmm. through it, and then cancel that service for the month?
Yeah.
But I think Microsoft has been demonstrating they're really interested in those long tail games mm-hmm. that just keep people coming back day
PUBG,
after day
sea
to play
of Thieves.
PUBG, yeah. Sea of Thieves.
Well, I mean,
Fortnite.
I think it's I do think this is really cool, and I think it's really great. And yes, I think it's the future of games.
There you go.
We solved it.
You agree, yeah.
But like, you see a company like Netflix, even how it's so easy to forget that it was like 5 years ago that their first Netflix original ever came out. You know, they had House of Cards and Orange is the New Black. 5-6 years. I mean, you know, it's a newish thing.
And but then it was now, like Arrested Development is like right at the same time, right?
Now, every single week, like they've gotten so sophisticated about like, and it's not a coincidence that, like, you know, there's one new sci-fi-ish fantasy show, you know, once a month or so. There's one thing if you're really into comedies or sitcoms or television like that, you know, once a month or so. Like, they do that stuff so that you're always getting your subscriptions worth. And, you know, if you're thinking about, maybe I should cancel Netflix, like, well, Altered Carbon is only 2 weeks away, so you might as well stick around and watch that.
Yeah.
And I think we'll see Microsoft, if this takes off and does well for them, and if they really think it's the future of their business, like there's no need to backload games all in, you know, October, November, December. Mm. Like you might see them try to have a steady drip of game releases
that's
all
a good
throughout
call.
The year.
Like that's like the summer of arcade mm-hmm. when it was like, oh, there's actually good games all summer and it was well thought out and distributed. I love that. Mm-hmm.
That was such a fun thing every year. Why did Microsoft cancel that?
I don't know, but it could come back with something like this.
Yeah.
perhaps.
Yeah, perhaps it could come back. So this will include Sea of Thieves. It will also include State of Decay 2 and Crackdown 3, which are supposed to be out this year. The inevitable next Forza game. The inevitable next Halo and Gears of War games. Yep. These will all be included in this Xbox Game Pass on day one.
That's crazy. I mean, can you cancel it freely?
I mean,
I do with, like, I'm watching Star Trek Discovery right now. Like, I don't need a CBS, whatever it's called, all-access subscription at all.
Yeah.
I'm not going to watch anything else on CBS. So I, like, kind of wait until a few episodes are out, and then I try to watch, you know, for the entire month I'm paying, and then, like, get out.
Yeah.
And can you do that with, you know, a couple games at one point?
Well, so I'm also going to count on, like, I can't speak for anyone else, but in my house I subscribe to HBO Now only for Game of Thrones. But then I accidentally kept it for like 3 more months.
And that's, like, the intention of all subscriptions.
Yeah, that cost me, like, I don't know what it cost me. It would have cost me $75 if I had it for 5 months. And it's like, well,
you could have got the DVD set.
Yeah.
And that's one thing that concerns me about going digital in general is that, like, I know not everybody is into physical copies as much as I am. But what about, like, collector's editions?
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, that's true.
If we go fully digital, will collector's editions get better because they want to really attract people to them, or will they become obsolete because there won't be disc drives?
Like, collector's editions are really crazy now, and I think we're already seeing, like you just touched on it, like, what this is really going to eat away at is just the standard $60 game. Mm-hmm. Like, the really high end, if you're a super fan that want the figurine and the collectible, like, there's never going to be a replacement for that.
Yeah. You
know? Like, that's always going to be a market that gets served, a small but lucrative market.
Yeah, for sure.
But to just buy, you know, a $60 game or $48 game on Amazon, like,
Yeah. Yeah, so if Xbox Game Pass is $10 a month, $120 a year, if you just play 2 full-price games with that service, it's paid for itself there. So, I mean, it seems to be a good deal. If you're an Xbox owner, I almost don't know why you wouldn't subscribe to this.
Or you could pay $10, play 100 games.
Yeah.
1 month.
And just bounce.
You have 1 month.
1 month.
And then you just bounce.
Well, see, I mean, that's also a very
what
good
a deal.
Value. Yeah. It's pretty cool.
I'm waiting for them to be some catch for, like, if you let your subscription lapse, it, like, eats your game saves or something like that. Like,
yeah, well, I mean, I assume it's like PS Plus, where, you know, your subscription ends, you lose access to the games.
And, yeah,
you know,
isn't there something like right now we all have, like, huge libraries of games, like, on Steam, for instance, the ones, all the games you bought but never play.
Yeah,
if you emulate games, people, like, always have this same issue where it's like you have this big, like, say you get every NES game ever. It's like, okay, you know the ones you like, probably 20 of them. You maybe want to explore the rest. And then there's 640 that you're, like, never going to play even know what to play.
Like, more isn't necessarily better.
Yeah, like having the library list. Isn't that great.
It's almost, I mean, I've run into that. Like, I have an SNES Classic where it's the greatest games ever made, you know, all in one little box. I mean, I'm exaggerating a little bit there, but among the greatest
games
ever made in one box. And that's actually more valuable and a cooler experience than having a Raspberry Pi that has every SNES game on it. So,
yeah, I mean, I think there's certain type of people that need it narrowed down. But that's, yeah, like, if I had 100 new Xbox games at my disposal right now, I probably wouldn't play a lot of them.
So I actually think the interface there is a non-trivial detail to make sure that it's, like, surfacing cool and interesting. Mm-hmm. You know, if it's curated in an individual taste, if you're a shooter fan or whatever, maybe they can do a good job of, like, presenting you, like, hey, did you ever play, I don't know, The Syndicate
or
whatever?
That's what Netflix has to do, right?
Yeah, and that's what Netflix really leans hard into. And they also do that to obfuscate the fact that there's not actually that much stuff on Netflix. Like, their interface is designed to not let you, like, I just want to see every comedy movie you have.
Yeah, like HBO allows you to do that, but Netflix doesn't.
Yeah, I don't like the interface at all. And I super don't like, I don't know why we're talking about Netflix.
Because there's parallels here, right?
But we're going on a little bit of a tangent. I was just going to complain about how I hate how everything autoplays a trailer.
With sound.
It's
terrible.
It's so stupid. And I've looked around. You can't turn that feature off. It's like, I'm just browsing. I don't want to hear the audio of every single thing I'm looking at.
Or, like, and sometimes for, like, I noticed I just started watching End of the Effing World.
Which is good, by the way. I recommend that.
But the trailer was kind of playing while I was like, you know, we were getting ready to watch and stuff like that. And it's the whole first episode.
It's like, you should
and
know.
I knew what happened in the first episode after that.
Yeah.
It spoiled it for me.
Yeah, it's really annoying.
With audio. I was like, gosh.
There's all kinds of neat, like, once you start paying attention to UI and how it works and its tricks, they, like, Netflix in particular does a lot of clever stuff. Like, whatever you're watching most recently, whatever you most recently watched, when you fire up Netflix, it won't ever be the first thing you see. It's always the second thing you see.
I noticed.
So it forces you to, like, take a look at one thing that you're not watching first.
They do a trailer, like, in the movie theater, basically.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, but they don't trick you. They're just like, you just tab over and then watch the thing, but they force you to notice something else first.
Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, we have an email on this topic from Stuart Hooper. He's from England, but living in Albuquerque, New Mexico.
Mm, good.
He says, I'm a very, very long-time listener, but first-time emailer. The future of the gaming industry just crashed through the TV screens of Xbox gamers everywhere, with Microsoft announcing that all first-party games will be coming to Xbox Game Pass the very same day they are released. So this year, Crackdown 3, Sea of Thieves, and State of Decay 2 will all be available on the service from day one.
We'll see about Crackdown.
We'll see. This is Stuart saying, I'd argue this is the biggest development in the gaming industry in a very long time. This is how publishers are going to kill off retail stores and the pre-owned games market in one fell swoop. Imagine big publishers like Ubisoft, EA, and Activision following suit with exactly the same subscription model for their games. If people are paying around $25 a month in total for this collection of subscription services, why would anyone go out and drop $60 on just one game? It is likely that the adoption rate for these services will grow and grow, while sales of games will slowly decline. However, we will no longer technically own our games. Publishers are unlikely to go exclusively with the subscription model to access their games right away, but could we be seeing a future where the next generation of consoles will have more people licensing games via a subscription service than buying their very own copies? Then further into the future, might subscription services be the only way to get games? Justin, you were saying you agree this is the future.
Yeah, I mean, whether it's good nor bad, like, I kind of don't know. Like, it could go either direction, but I think it's very likely to only become a bigger and bigger portion of the video game industry. Like, what was his name?
Stuart.
Yeah, like Stuart said. Yeah, like the crossing of the Rubicon, or the big test will be if a game is only available on a subscription service, and then we really are looking at a model that's more
interesting. More like talking about like a Netflix.
And they want to pull you onto their subscription service.
So Microsoft says, you know, exclusively available on Game Pass is, you know, Super Meat Boy 2 or whatever, and then it's no different than, you know, than a television show only being available on HBO.
And that already happens with, you know, digital only games. Mm-hmm. It's just not part of the subscription service. Maybe those all will be. But
I just hope it's not a separate service for every publisher, because like I don't need
it. Will be.
It will be.
That's not, I just want one. I just want to pay for one.
That's what I'm saying.
That's what I'm saying.
TV is so weird right now.
Yeah, it's annoying.
Everything is terrible, man. Like, because EA has
everything is terrible.
I mean, EA has EA Origin, and you know, Blizzard has always had Battle.net, but now there's a non-Blizzard game, an Activision game, Destiny 2 is on Battle.net, and Uplay. And Bethesda has their own launcher.
Well, I mean, this isn't quite the same thing, but Nintendo is also working on something similar, like some sort of game subscription service with its online model.
I don't even know that it is a rumor, but that's been the speculation. Why is Virtual Console taking so long?
Yeah.
A common theory is that they're having a similar, you know, subscription service, you know, pay $10 a month and get access to.
Well, and they said that there is a subscription service that they announced, which is like two retro games a month.
Yeah, you're right. Yeah, they did announce that,
hopefully that expands
with the online play and yada yada. But I'm thinking more like a Netflix, like with your subscription comes access to, you know, every Mario.
Nintendo has such a good library for that. Other people don't. Like, it's such a brilliant idea.
Yep.
Yeah.
Dude, Toys R Us closing this week.
I know.
So many of them.
Yeah.
Like a fifth.
Like 180.
Speaking of retailers dying. Yeah.
Toys R Us is bankrupt. It's crazy. It's hard times out there.
You know why?
For retail.
It's Babies R Us that ruined them.
Babies R Us ruined them?
It's very sad.
Yeah.
I have such good Toys R Us memories. It's where I demoed games.
Yep. Yeah, I have a lot of good Toys R Us.
Like, that's what you would do. You would go to a retail place and play a new game. I played Ocarina of Time at Best Buy, played Mario 64 at Toys R Us. I remember it so well.
Guitar Hero.
I played Tetris at Toys R Us. I remember on a giant Game Boy.
Yeah, what I didn't like is their system was one where you had to have the game box.
Game slips.
You had to get the game slips and take it up to the front. There are other stores that actually had the games hanging.
Dude, so that switched over in the middle of the NES.
Yeah.
And I remember some stores didn't do it. Some, like, that was like in Arizona when I moved to Arizona when I was a kid. They did it there, and I thought it was really weird because NES games have a little tab on the back.
Yeah.
When they're sealed.
Exactly.
They're all hung up. Yeah. And you'd see like there'd be like a rack.
Yeah.
And like every single game, you know, was there in quantity. And then you could see how many were missing. Mm. And when they replaced it, you could never see how many like pieces of paper were missing. So it was kind of a popularity.
Yeah, that's interesting.
For that.
Yeah.
It was so beautiful. Can you imagine that? Three cabinets of brand new NES games?
Yes.
That was quite a sight.
I see it.
It was quite a sight.
All right, moving on. We've got a release date finally for God of War on PS4. He's just God of War. It's out 4/20, April 20th, the same day as Nintendo Labo. Mm-hmm. We got a tough decision.
And Super Troopers too.
Yeah.
Tough decision to make.
Which is probably the most synced up with that holiday.
That's probably the most 4/20.
And I'm using holiday loosely.
Well,
entertainment option on that day.
Yeah.
Yes, we've known it's supposed to be coming in early 2018 for some time.
It does feel a little bit later than I would have guessed, but you know, it's not Q1. It's a ways into Q2, yeah, actually.
It's true. It's currently the only big game scheduled for April. You know, only a game, big game that has an actual release date in April, mm-hmm, not counting Nintendo Labo, which is kind of a different thing.
And we don't know much about those games.
Yeah, we know it's Cardboard.
Mm-hmm. One of them could be Metroid Prime 4. We don't know.
And then there was another. There was.
You gotta, yes, build it.
Metroid Prime 4 is you Labo. Build the game you want yourself. Metroid Prime 4? You build it. and then there was a new trailer for God of War. I didn't watch it. You watched it, Sam?
Yeah.
It's
a story trailer.
Yeah.
So it has Kratos talking very normally instead of just screaming Zeus.
Good.
Yeah.
Which is unusual. Yeah. You don't see that much.
Yeah.
Screaming his son instead.
Yeah, they really give away a lot. So, you know, I don't want to talk about it too much if you want to keep it on blackout. But, you know, the plot of like who his son is and like what he, you know, if he's Kratos' son, like Kratos is a god of war. It's in, mm-hmm, the title.
Yep.
Like, it's what does that right mean there for his son? Is he a half human? And that's, I think, what the game will be about.
Hmm.
And monsters.
You know, the story trailer is obviously deliberately trying to get people to talk about the lore and story and how this game carries on from the others. But as it gets closer to release, I'm seeing a lot more people talk about... prior to this, all the attention and focus had been on, you know, the gameplay systems and the combat and the new cool axe you have and how it's not a fixed perspective anymore. And now people are finally starting to dig more into, well, wait, what does it actually mean that he's switched mythologies and how is that possible? And,
yeah, is he covering his tracks? And like, where is there some story behind that?
And where did the, what were they called? The chains that he used in the previous games. Oh, it's escaping
his
me
chain
now.
Blades?
Is that what they were? They had an actual... Anyway, the point is they're not there
did
anymore.
They have a name?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, because you switch between the big sword and the... Yeah.
And his and he's got... His arms are bandaged up. Mm. And it's like, well, okay, like, is this game going to get into, like, what happened? Like, so now... Mm. I mean, I'm not like, God of War has the deepest lore. But it is like a long-running franchise, and it's interesting. And
Zeus!
I'm definitely curious to learn more.
Ares!
Yeah. Yeah. They're so silly.
That'll probably be in there. And then it also shows some, like, cool, like, kind of gross creature designs.
Mm-hmm. I like that.
One of them's, like, a guy in a tree, and he's like, you gotta cut off my head. This is what happens. It's a laugh moment in the trailer.
Yeah, like,
hilarious.
It's a weird game. Like, I like that. Remember the big snake?
Yeah.
The big bearded dragon? Yeah. I loved him. Yeah.
Yeah. Like, that stuff is just, there's some kookiness to it, which I think that series needs.
Yeah.
What also opens the door for, like, now that mythology switching is a thing, like, okay, they've laid the groundwork for, like, 20 more years of God of War games now. Like, now that he's not relegated to just killing Greek gods.
Yeah. When you watch the trailer, tell me if you feel the influence of The Last of Us in it.
Well, but here's the thing. I'm already interested in that game. Like, I'm already on board. I want to play it day one, so I don't really need to
watch
more.
You have to read the rewind script, so might as well.
Is that true?
No, I don't know.
That is something I don't think people often consider. Is a lot of stuff has to get spoiled for us as part of our jobs.
Yeah, it's horrible. Every movie my wife ever sees, she's like, do you already know what's going to happen in this? I'm like, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, first of all, everyone's just talking about it in the office all the time, you know, the morning after.
But we also sometimes speculate.
Yeah, also, even if we haven't heard people talking about it, I may have to, like, read a review for The Last Jedi before I even go see it, you know, if I'm required for the VO reading or whatever. So.
And that makes us a little bit less sensitive to spoilers, and we try really hard to not give them.
Yeah.
And so always apologetic when we do, but it's also just kind of the nature of covering media.
Many, many perks of this job. Yep. Unfortunately, a few downsides, one of which is, like, you know, everything that's going to happen in a game before you even get a chance to play it.
For me, it's a perk.
Yeah. You don't care about spoilers at all. You didn't even care about spoilers for Star Wars.
No, I don't. Because we grew up in a time where I loved hearing my friend describe to me how awesome a movie was and then going to see it. I like that.
Anyway, God of War out 420. I think God of War looks really fun. I look forward to playing it. Let's check in with the listeners.
Hey, listeners.
Hey.
Listeners, remember you can always reach us at the email address, gamescoop@ign.com, just like Big Tony Style.
Big Tony Style.
What a twist. Impossible.
It's been a while.
That's impossible.
He's been dead 20 years.
Big Tony Style says, I love gaming in January because there aren't a ton of major releases, and it's a great time to catch up on all the 2017 games I missed.
Same, Tony.
That being said, there is one game on my list that I will likely never play. Persona 5.
Oh, boy. Yeah, I could have guessed it.
I've never played a Persona game, and while it may be shallow of me, I cannot look past the art style and commit 70 hours to playing a game people absolutely adore. Yeah, he doesn't like the art style.
Oh,
Big Tony,
Tony
style. Hard disagree.
That like, is.
The art style is so cool. That's like one of the coolest things about that game.
Yeah.
It's like the art and the music. And the
I got
cool
in trouble
vibe.
For talking about this in the office, so I'm not going to do it anymore.
Okay.
Andrew got really upset at me.
Big Tony style says, I'm curious if the Scoop Crew have come across a game that is widely praised, but you cannot bring yourself to play. If so, what game was it and why?
I mean, you got one.
Yeah, well, first of all, I can't let, it's very wild to me. Like, I don't know, like, I'm actually not a huge Persona 5 fan because I'm not a huge JRPG fan. So by extension, Persona just didn't do it for me. But the art is like, I didn't know that there was anybody
out
there
it's like,
that didn't like that aesthetic. No, it's funny that I didn't know that we were reading this question. We were just chatting about it before the show started. Sometimes
Big Tony Style knows.
Big Tony Style, is that maybe how he always?
Maybe he hasn't seen Morgana. Is Morgana so charming?
Yeah, Morgana's really good.
It's a cat.
Yeah, a little cat. Your cat buddy. Your cat buddy has a bandana.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
that might sell you on it.
We were just talking before the show recorded about how one of my pet peeves are sometimes people talk about, you know, games that will appeal to you even if you don't normally like that kind of game. Like, even if you're not a shooter fan, you should check out, you know, whatever, Titanfall 2, because it does so many special things that it's worth checking out. And then I get fooled by that. I say, I'm not a JRPG fan, but I'm still going to try out Persona. And then I try it out, and I say, nope, still don't like it.
Yeah.
Still not for me. But then sometimes the inverse is true. Sometimes it's like, oh, okay, even though this isn't normally my taste, you know, this one's able to sort of transcend that and, you know, go over
sure.
with me. So you never know until you try.
But is there a specific game?
For what? That? Oh, well, his actual question was...
Yeah. Is there a game that's very popular?
Are you saying you don't have to... Because there's a difference, like trying a game and saying, like, I knew I wouldn't like this, and then I didn't
like it. They're talking about not even trying.
Oh, well, for me, it's horror games. I can understand and respect the style of Resident Evil and the Louisiana, like, you know, that backwoods. Like, that's all really cool and fascinating, but no, I'm not interested in horror games at all.
Yeah.
But sometimes you have to have a game kind of turn you off to that series of games. Like, I think you're using the JRPG example. If you have a couple bad experiences with that, you're like, maybe I won't be playing those anymore.
Fool me once.
Yeah, I feel that way about Dark Souls, although I did try two of them.
Same.
Oh.
That was like, everyone's like, okay, even if you don't, that's another perfect example.
I'm not
going
to play them again. Like, nobody's ever going to convince me to go back into it.
It's a perfect example.
What about remastered on Switch?
Well, that's what's happening with Monster Hunter right now, too, is that, like, you know, people are saying, go back and try this game now. Everything's different. But we were watching videos of the combat looking exactly
Seems
the same.
Very suspiciously not different.
Yeah.
No, Dark Souls is such a perfect example of the phenomenon I was just talking about, where everyone's like, even if you've not been into those games in the past, try Bloodborne. It's different. Mm-hmm. You know, that'll probably go over with you.
Oh,
better.
Yeah, and I never tried that for that very same reason.
And then I tried Bloodborne. I'm like, nope, still don't like it.
Yeah.
But I really respect people's opinions on those games, and I know why they like them now. So that's what's cool, is that I feel like it's good to have an educated opinion of why you don't like it and then know why other people like it, and like to each his or her own.
Sure.
I'm not bashing Dark Souls. I'm not saying that those people are wrong. It's just not for me.
I would like to hear your account of why people like the Souls and Bloodborne games, just out of my personal interest.
Oh, I think it's because it offers... a very difficult but bite-sized series of challenges. So it's like you can do these kind of runs in it, right? And that, it's like you can go, I'm going to get just this far and then retreat. And that feels really good. And because you do that, you keep pushing until you get to like another save point. And then it's like you made progress. And it's this good feeling of like how difficult it was to get to the next progress point.
That sounds like Steamroll Dig.
Or I was going to say it's Castlevania. And the later Castlevania,
Ecclesia,
Symphony
of the Night,
is like, it was all about like just barely making it to a save room.
Yeah, that's
you
true.
Know. And I get really excited about that. But it's also a 3D game that the combat never feels good to me.
Yeah.
It always feels like I'm rolling so slow and I'm blocking right when I missed the animation. And you can get used to all that. I'm sure it's fun.
Yeah, sure. That's interesting. For me, widely praised games that I cannot bring myself to play would be any competitive multiplayer shooter like PUBG, Fortnite, League of Legends, or even like League of Legends. Not a shooter, I realize, but any sort of like very competitive online game is just not going to be for me.
What about Splatoon?
No, I've never played Splatoon.
Yeah, I mean, I think in video games in general and the discussion around video games, I wish there was a little bit more, you know, accounting for recognition of taste. You know, no one would ever
fans
argue.
Of the genre.
That's true. But I mean, if someone's like, you know, have you been to this new food place yet? And you're like, oh, you know, no, I just don't really like seafood that much. I'm going to be like, oh, okay, fair enough. But in video games, people kind of lose their minds, you know, around if you don't like or couldn't get into an immensely popular game. You know, I use the example of Resident Evil 4 earlier. Like, that's a game that I've tried to play two or three times and just couldn't get into it. And other people love it so much that they keep insisting, well, you must be playing it wrong, or I wish you would give it another chance. And I'm like, look, it's just, it's not for me. Like, that's not, I can recognize what the game does well, yeah. But in video games in general, I don't think there's enough. It's a little bit more hive-mindy than I think it should be.
I would love... I always try new things and it just kind of check back in with stuff. I never, like, would go full blackout, but I'll be distrustful of Dark Souls for a while. But, like, I tried Overwatch, and it was exactly what I thought it would be.
That's another one I've never played.
I mean, it's exactly like, okay, if you have a bunch of friends and you play this every night, it's going to be your life, and that makes total sense. But I don't play games that way.
I do think Overwatch, Damon, I'm going to do the exact same thing I decried other people for doing. But I do think, for me personally, this has been my experience, is that Overwatch is sort of the non-shooter fan's shooter, because you can be really skilled and successful at that games by playing in a relatively low-skilled way. Like, I play as Symmetra, and all she does is put turrets on the wall.
That's really smart.
And you don't need to have any aiming skill at all. And there's some strategy around where you're putting the turrets, but, like, really, it's pretty... It's just a very, very different experience than if you're playing one of the shooty characters.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. No, I get that.
I think you might like it.
You've mentioned that before, and maybe you're right, but that doesn't you know, it doesn't get around the fact that my gaming habits and experience are like a very solo, just like sitting on my couch by myself, relaxing, that sort of environment. So anyway.
Yeah. You know, Big Tony Style mentioned it as just sort of an aside, but I completely agree with him on January, by the way.
Like, January's, yeah.
It's a really wonderful month. Love gaming in January because there's no pressure to like keep up, like, I'm falling behind on Assassin's Creed or whatever the big Q4 game is.
Yeah,
like,
for sure.
It's just a...
This week in which Dragon Ball and Monster Hunter come out.
Well, it's usually, I mean, not everywhere in the world, but it's typically like kind of horrible weather. So, you know, you're not wanting to be out and about anyway. It's a slow-ish time for work, slow-ish time for games, just very leisurely... Play whatever you want.
Yep. All right, this is Evan from Rockville, Maryland. And he says, I recently picked up Cuphead on Xbox because all the reviews said it's a must-have. However, I just cannot seem to get anywhere with Cuphead. I barely got to World 2, and I've probably spent 2+ hours on just one boss level. I quit and went to play the new Assassin's Creed because I know there's an intriguing story. And I can make actual progress, and I generally enjoy the mechanics of the series. I feel bad about not being good at Cuphead, like I'm a lesser gamer, because I just have no interest in spending multiple hours trying to perfect one level and getting super frustrated when in the same amount of time I could play something else. Should I feel this way? I'd be interested in your thoughts on this, and hard games in general. Evan from Rock.
I think you just don't want to have the feeling like you're wasting time. Like, even if you don't beat the boss or you don't make it to the next bonfire in Dark Souls, as long as you feel like you're improving or you got closer, then I think people's tolerance level for like trying over and over again is kind of okay. But if you don't even feel like you're getting anywhere, if it's like, well, I don't feel my skills improving, I don't feel like I'm getting any better, then yeah, I mean, that it's easy to understand how that could feel immensely frustrating.
I mean, it's the same discussion. Different people like very different things in games. And
yeah.
For some people, repetitive difficulty is the thing that draws them in. I remember Chloe wrote an op-ed on like why Dark Souls isn't fun.
Yeah.
And she likes it anyway. Like, she's not playing it because it's fun. She's playing it because it's challenging or, you know, disturbing, or like there's all these other reasons. It's just like, you know, watching a dramatic movie. You know, you don't go there because it's fun. It might take you out of yourself, or it might teach you something, but it doesn't have to be fun. Cuphead, I didn't find fun, and I found it beautiful and intriguing, and I loved watching it. But like, man, like, I got pretty far in that game, and it's not very rewarding, and I don't feel like I got better at it, and that is a problem.
Yeah, my wife hates seeing me get angry at a video game. She always just tries to get me to, like, you know, turn it off.
Yeah.
And I'm like, no, you don't understand. Like, I actually don't have I have a pretty low tolerance level for, you know, challenge. And if I die a handful of times, I'll go play something else, typically in 2018 now. But even so, you know, she tries to, like, pull me away. And every gamer knows, like, sometimes it's fun to die and try again. And it's funny trying to explain that to someone that's not really into the hobby.
Yeah.
I think you need to have a community when you have a difficult game. And that's why Pac-Man Championship Edition was so fun when everybody's playing online, or like Geometry Wars before that.
Yeah.
When you have a leaderboard, that really helps. And then when Mario came in the office, everybody played it. And it was fun saying, like, how many moons do you have? How far did you get? Talking about the really difficult parts of that game. Like, you need to have that kind of... It feels good to be better than other people at games, no matter what, right? So whether that's a competitive game that's intended that way or just one that you're discussing, I think that's a really important part of it. Cuphead, like, the people that got good at Cuphead in the office, I was, like, super impressed by them. And they clearly were having fun. Like, Lily got so good at that game. Mm-hmm. And she got, like, just plowed through it, played it over and over again, got better and better and better. And I was, like, it was so cool watching her play and being impressed by that and stuff like that. So I can totally see why she was having a great time with that game.
Yeah.
She was great at it.
But, Evan, like, you don't have to worry about being a lesser gamer. I don't even know what that even means.
Unless you're in an arcade in 1981.
Yeah.
And your quarter's on that machine. Then you're going
to
get shamed.
Yeah, it doesn't feel good for a game to defeat you, you know, and you put it down and move on. But I also, you know, there's
also, I would point out, like, you don't owe the game anything.
Time is precious. Yeah. I mean, I've harped on this on Scoop before, but when you're not having fun with a game, throw it across the room, go walk away and play something else. Like,
or write an interesting op-ed.
You have this much time each day to play video games, you know? So don't waste a moment of it on something where, you know, your heart's already trying to tell you.
And now you know the plight of the guide writer and the reviewer.
Well, yeah.
Playing it.
That's different.
Or you're fired.
The difference is you're being paid.
Yeah, that's true.
In that scenario.
Yeah.
Unless
you don't finish your review.
This is Mikhail from Sao Paulo, Brazil.
Cool.
Says, long-time listener. For over 3 years, first-time writing. I have a question to the panel regarding the Nintendo Switch. I don't know if you heard, but Nintendo is not officially operating in Brazil, so it's a little hard and expensive to get a Switch and its games here. However, I will be developing part of my postdoctoral research in the U.S. starting April or May this year, and will stay there for 6 months. Because I will not bring my PS4... I thought this would be the perfect opportunity to get a Switch. So here's the deal. I have some time in advance so I can start saving money now to get the Switch and games and accessories. Let's say I'll have more or less $600 to spend. The Switch is currently $300, so that leaves me with another $300 exclusively for games and accessories. My question is, what do you and the panel think is the best way to spend this budget? Is there an accessory I absolutely have to buy, or should I spend everything in games? I should note that I intend to play it primarily in handheld mode, and that my favorite type of games are RPGs.
Is there a Kobayashi Maru here where you could play digitally once you have a Switch and just download stuff from the shop?
That's all I did.
Proxy?
I don't have one.
Like, I'm just wondering if you can get around that in Brazil. Because then you just pay, you know, it might be hard. But once you have a U.S. Switch... Mm-hmm. You should probably be able to figure out how to use shop channel.
You can access the Japanese store just now. Anywhere in the U.S., you just set up an account.
Anyway, that's the cheat to this.
Yeah,
But
it's a question of, like, separate. What to spend this extra $300 on. I mean, I think...
So you can use it in handheld mode.
I think I'm the outlier here, but I don't have any Switch accessories at all. None.
I would say...
Have a case.
I would suggest getting a case.
But I use a bandana.
That's what I was going
to
say.
You need, like, something to put it in.
A sock.
But I have a shoulder bag. I have a messenger bag that I come to work on every day.
It has a pocket.
Yeah, and surely every messenger bag, like, it's 2018, almost every bag has some sort of spot to put, like, an iPad or a laptop.
Yeah, it's a nice padded pocket.
I've never once felt the need for a Switch carrying case.
Okay, well, if you have a backpack or something that has a slot for it, that's good. But don't just throw it in your backpack.
But here's what I will say is...
I think you should do that too.
Philip and me and our tech writer actually collaborated on a best Nintendo Switch carrying case feature. And it runs down, like, hard shell and soft options. And you can look that up if you do want a case.
I think you need a battery pack.
I was gonna suggest that too. The cases are only like $12-$15. So I think a battery pack, that was also a good option.
For handheld, especially if he's going to play a lot in handheld.
Yeah, like, I was just on a 6-hour flight and used a battery pack, no problems. Just played straight through. I still had battery when I got back to the house. It was amazing.
Yeah.
Extra controllers are...
Those are $30.
Very expensive. And if he's playing it, like, the Pro Controller is one of the greatest game controllers of all time. But
if he's in handheld mode,
you don't need it.
And he likes RPGs.
Yeah.
So probably he's going to be doing a lot of single-player gaming.
Yeah.
I don't think you need to worry about using or getting other controllers. But what about a memory card?
Yes, you'll need
another $30.
You'll need an SD card
for like a 32 gig SD card is going to run you like $30.
You want a much bigger one than that.
120.
All right, 120. Then that's probably going to be $80. No. Something like that? No? Not that much?
Well, 30. I mean, I guess I bought mine on Black Friday. I think those prices are cheaper than you think they are.
Yeah, I just looked before this. A 32 one on Amazon is $30.
Oh, boy, no. I mean, wait for a sale then. Like, I mean, I guess maybe you can because you're going to be downloading the games. But I mean, those are things that are frequently on sale.
Yeah. And then
there's a lot of games.
And then that brings us to the games. You're going to want Zelda and Mario. Mm-hmm. I know you like RPGs, but you're going to want Mario.
They're essential. They're essentials.
Xenoblade, if you like RPGs.
Xenoblade 2.
I would suggest Mario plus Rabbids.
Mario plus Rabbids, Golf Story.
SteamWorld Dig 2, Stardew Valley, and Darkest Dungeon.
That's good. Along with the Golf Story. Yeah, I think that's great.
Man, what a great lineup.
I know. And I think all of that could be got for around $300.
Yeah.
Yeah, and there's used games now.
Yeah, that's true.
Zelda might be cheaper than it was when it came out.
Yeah.
Yeah, the fact that Switch is region locked, but only in the sense that you need to be in, like you need to be in the Japanese eShop account to download Japanese games. Mm-hmm. But you can do that from anywhere in the world. Makes me wonder if him being in Brazil, you touched on this earlier, like what's the cheapest just based off currency exchanges or whatever else? Like, should he just start from day one with a U.S. account, or maybe there's a better option there? Like, yeah. I don't really know. I've never really dug into that much.
Yeah.
Like, if you're in a country where you can't use your country's native store anyway because there isn't one, you know, maybe there a little bit of thought needs to be given to, like, where, you know, where do you keep most of your library? What region?
Yeah. Although that's not really necessary. Like, you don't have to you don't even have to consider any of that if you're just playing, like, the base game of Zelda and Mario, right?
I don't know. I don't know if they're different prices. Like, that's what I'm saying. I really don't know.
You're talking about just downloading them.
Mm-hmm.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Well, Mikhail, let us know if you do end up getting a Switch and what accessories and games you end up selecting for it. And then, happy gaming and enjoy your Switch. And man, guys, I think that brings us to Video Game 20 Questions. I think we're already here.
That happens when a quarter of the talking doesn't happen.
Yeah, that's true. We can just get through the topics really quickly. Our suggestion.
Stupid Marty bringing us down the whole time.
Stupid Marty.
That's his nickname. We could like to call him that around here.
Our suggestion this week comes from Eric Woody. Let the questioning begin.
No state?
No state. You don't know. Yeah. You're flying blind this week.
All right. In this game, does your character wear a hat?
You can. It's possible.
It's possible to have
To wear a hat. Does your character speak?
I love it.
I think so.
Damon, you're killing me.
I think so.
For some reason, I feel like since it's only Sam that I'm letting down, I'm like so much more inclined to like. Do you collect and spend some money or currency of some kind in this game?
No.
We've had three sillies. I think.
Can you see your hands?
We already had that. That wasn't the opening question.
Yes.
So wait. So let's recap. Uh-huh. You can wear a hat. You see your hands. Damon thinks maybe you speak.
So.
And I already forgot about the fourth one. Money.
Yeah, you don't collect and spend money.
Okay.
All right. It's Dig Dug.
He doesn't wear a hat.
Yeah, he has a space helmet.
Is that true?
Yeah. He's in a full suit.
In the game?
Yeah.
Or only on like the cabinet?
No. He's like walking around with goggles.
Weird.
Was this before 1990?
No.
Is this before 2000?
Yes.
90s game.
Was this released on 16-bit consoles?
No.
Interesting.
Game Boy?
Yeah, Game Boy or the generation after, PS1 era.
Was this a handheld game?
Nope.
Whoa.
Was this released for the PS1, Xbox, GameCube era consoles? No.
PS1, Nintendo
64. Excuse me. Yeah, PS1, Nintendo 64 era.
Yes.
Okay. Was this on Nintendo 64?
Yes. That's 10.
Jet Force Gemini?
What? Maybe. Was this exclusively on the N64?
Yes.
Was it made by Nintendo?
No.
Is it a Japanese game?
Good question.
No.
Okay.
Ask those in a different order.
Yeah, you're right. Yeah, that was my bad. Okay, to recap. N64 exclusive, but not made by Nintendo, mm-hmm. not made in Japan, which is actually good. That's actually gets us somewhere.
It could be rare.
Well, but
what about the Rockstar game?
We had the Rare thing recently already.
Yeah.
I consider Rare games made by Nintendo, personally.
Space Station Silicon Valley.
So it's not first person because you can see your hands.
Mm-hmm.
So it's actually not GoldenEye, although maybe you can. I don't remember if you only see your gun or if you see your hand like holding the gun.
When your knife comes out?
Yeah.
Do they have that? I don't remember that game at all. Was this a Rare game?
Made by Rare?
Yeah.
No.
Okay.
Oh boy.
But Nintendo 64 games that aren't Nintendo, there's not a whole lot of them. There's like Cruising USA and...
That's what I'm... Yeah, that's kind of... Yeah, you're right. Is the company that made this game still in business?
Man. I don't think so.
I don't know how much that helps me.
Yeah, it could be like Atari or something.
Space Station Silicon Valley was made by DMA Design that would go on to be the GTA team.
Is that Rockstar's GTA team?
Yeah.
I was wondering. And they made Body Harvest also, or is that not them?
Yes. I get a little bit mixed up about what studios were working on.
Okay.
Right.
I don't know how to narrow this down.
I think that was DMA Design.
Does this have multiplayer?
Yes.
Good question.
What did you play?
What was that face?
Yes. What if it's like NBA Jam or Mortal Kombat?
Maybe I was a little too enthusiastic.
Yeah, Mortal Kombat like trilogy or something like that. That would be horrible.
Yeah.
Is this game a part of a series?
Yes.
N64 exclusive Bomberman 64.
Yeah, that's
was
good.
Made in Japan though. And the way he said yes, I mean, I don't want to burn a question on it, but I have a sense that this game's particularly notable for its multiplayer. What were some of the big four-player...
Well, Rare did so many of them.
And also like Mario Party, so it's not one of those.
Pokemon Puzzle League, it's all Japanese.
Yeah, not one of those. I'm trying to think about other like big multiplayer N64 games that were not not made by Nintendo.
The Japanese development was responsible for so much Nintendo 64.
Yeah.
It's really weird to think of non-Japanese companies. And so he said it's part of a series?
Yeah.
And it's something 64, probably.
Oh, yeah. I guess I don't know that.
Grand Theft Auto was on Nintendo 64, some weird version of that.
Mm-mm, I don't think so.
Like a top-down one? Oh, no, that's PlayStation. I don't know where to go from here.
Yeah.
Three questions left.
Probably shouldn't have asked all those silly questions at the beginning.
Well, they could help in the end. What did I play with people?
That's exactly, the only things I keep flashing on are like, you know, Smash and Mario Party and GoldenEye and like all the games that it can't be.
Should we ask, does this critically acclaimed thing help at all? Or
do you think is it helpful to know if it's like a shooter or a fighting game? Or, I mean, it's with only three questions left.
Fighting game.
Could have been StarCraft 64.
That's good. Is that multiplayer?
I presume so. I actually don't know.
That'd be so stupid if that's what it was. I don't know. I don't know where to go. I mean, it could be like Tony Hawk, you know?
Mm. No, but it's exclusive to the N64.
I don't think did we get exclusive to
N64? Mm-hmm. Three questions.
What about that snowboarding stuff?
1080 snowboarding was made by... Was made by Nintendo.
Wave Race.
Yeah, I know they're all first party games. Mario Kart, Diddy Kong Racing.
But definitely those racing games are.
Yeah, Wave Race and 1080 snowboarding are, for sure. I don't know about some others.
What are we missing?
Yeah. Damon, you got three questions,
Damon. What game are we missing?
Let's get another question out here. It's been a while since we've had a question.
I mean, N64 era was like my era.
Okay.
Did Shadows of the Empire have multiplayer? Like, I think that was just a single-player Star Wars adventure. Yeah, Turok Dinosaur Hunter?
Was this licensed?
Wait.
Those are both licensed games.
Could be Turok Dinosaur Hunter.
For sure.
Was this a licensed game?
Yeah.
No.
Hopes. Hopes dashed.
That was good. We got those all eliminated.
If you freeze frame here, you can pinpoint the moment where Justin gave up. I was so sure that it was Turok for some reason. Could still be Cruising USA.
I think.
San Francisco Rush.
Yeah, I know. There's all these dumb racing games that we could go for. They're really popular at the time.
I mean, we got...
Or what about Brawlers? We got Gauntlet Legends.
That was on PlayStation 2 as well.
I played a 64 Gauntlet game.
Yeah. The dumb racing game thing.
Oh, what about like dungeon crawly games. Do those exist?
Yeah.
Like Baldur's, no, not the Baldur's Gate.
I think about that stuff mostly as being on PC in that era.
Yeah. Was this, should we just ask if this was on PC also?
It was an N64 exclusive. What are you doing? What are you doing over there?
I think we're waffling around a lot. We got to bring it home.
Well, that's because it's only two of us.
Is this a? I feel like I just want to ask if it's a racing game, and if not,
all right.
Is it a racing game?
No.
Okay.
Not a racing game. That's well, 19.
Oh, somebody just texted me. Maybe that was the answer. No, it's not the answer.
Andres hasn't been much help here this whole time.
Yeah, Andres, what? Any ideas?
Yeah. Yeah, but that was made by Rare. But I mean, I like where your head's at. I was so sure it could be Doom 64.
GoldenEye for sure.
We got
in the absence of anything else, I'm gonna guess. Is it not
Doom 64? That isn't a multiplayer.
None at all.
No, we just played it.
Really?
We did play it recently. Yeah. Wow. It's actually pretty fun and playable.
I would have never guessed that. I had that game, and it was one of my favorite N64 games. But I guess I never considered that there was no deathmatch in it. I don't know.
Is it Space Station Silicon Valley?
No, it is not. Okay. So the question, that one question that gave me a little trouble, this game is developed and published by Interplay. Are they still around?
I would say no.
Okay.
No.
I didn't think they were still around.
But hold on. If it's Interplay, it's Rampage 64.
No.
Oh, man.
Good guess, though. Like all those Midway games.
It is the third game in a series.
I still don't know.
Wait, hold on.
Was it Mortal Kombat?
It is a fighting game series.
Clay Fighter 64?
No. Whoa. Clay Fighter 63 and a third.
Oh.
So dumb.
Clay Fighter 63 and a third. The first two were on Super Nintendo.
Yeah, Interplay.
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 1997. That's why I felt like it was, when you asked
that was
multiplayer.
97,
yeah.
Man, okay. Clay Fighter.
You said multiplayer. I said yes, and I thought it was my enthusiasm might give you a hint there.
I remember the print ads well.
Yeah, you were dancing around the whole fighting game genre. Yep,
that weird snowman.
Never got there.
Oh, that's, yeah, that guy was scary.
That's what the snowman was, a hat. Mm-hmm. At least one. And then about the voice thing, I'm sure there was digitized. I would guess there was digitized speech in that game.
Yeah. Yeah.
Not much of it.
I never played it. We should get that game.
Yeah.
We'll pick it up and try it out.
Are you sure it's not in one of our bins in the game library?
I would think we would have pulled that one out if it was.
I've actually never played any Clay Fighter game.
Me neither.
You're not missing much.
But the idea is that they used the Donkey Kong 64 era, not 64, Country era graphics of pre-rendering to make it look really cool. So they actually had, like, they probably used clay or a model similar to that to position it, take a picture, digitize it. So they had really good animations of things walking around and looking like clay.
Yeah. I mean, they made three of those games, so some people played them.
63 and a third.
a good suggestion from Eric Woody.
A good suggestion?
I think so.
A good suggestion?
Well, would you kind
of... I did know the name of the game.
Yeah.
We almost got there. If we would have...
No, we would have never gotten
well,
there.
Well, we zeroed in on racing game instead of fighting game.
And then we didn't have an answer.
If we wouldn't have burned those three silly questions,
what would it have been if it was a racing game? We would have guessed Daytona, Cruisin'.
I would have guessed Cruisin'.
Rush the Rock.
Yeah, Rush the Rock.
There's three different ones.
Yeah. All right, before we go this week, what are we playing this weekend?
Oh, man, I'm playing RimWorld.
Which one's that?
It's a really good PC simulation game where you have some colonists that crash land on a planet, and then you have to make a colony and, you know,
this
plant
is the
food.
Dwarf Fortress game?
Yeah, the Dwarf Fortress-like game.
Is it all text?
No.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
It's a Dwarf Fortress-like game.
Yeah, you're just, like, you know, growing food and building structures and, you know, mining out ore and stuff like
sure,
that.
Sure, when it's No Man's Sky, you don't like it.
But like, so, you control the colonists.
This is on PC. You're playing on Steam.
Yeah.
Isn't Dwarf Fortress known for like having a very large possibility space?
Yes.
A lot of different.
That's
things
how this game is.
This
too.
Game is too. Cool. Yeah. I really like that.
Not to the degree that Dwarf Fortress is, which is, you know, that's its whole shtick. But
yeah. Okay. Yeah.
Fun that's fact: fun. For many years before I worked here, I owned DwarfFortress.com.
That's not the only domain you at least used to own. Right?
Yeah, I used to own sr388.com, which is the planet
the
Metroids come from.
Did you let that evaporate?
Yeah, actually not long after I worked here, I was taking a look. Like, domains are cheapish, $10 or $15 a year, but I own like 30 or 40 of them, and then I just like let go of that whole part of my life.
I didn't do the thing where you start emailing people that might have the rights to try to sell it?
I just didn't even bother. I'm just like, it's fine. I'll just let them all lapse. I'm a busy man.
Sam, what you playing?
Stardew Valley.
Mm-hmm.
I started a couple
Switch,
weeks ago.
Right?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And I have a pig. but I only got the pig to get truffles, and then I just bought truffles at that random store with the cart. It just made me so mad. So now I have this useless pig. It does nothing for me.
But you like the game, right?
Yeah, it's so good, and like I'm completely addicted to it, and everything that people say about it is true.
Yeah.
My hands hurt from playing it on Switch so much.
Wow. Yeah, it's taken me a long time to get to it, too, but I'm also playing Stardew Valley finally and enjoying it. But then Darkest Dungeon came out last week and kind of distracted me from...
Ooh, on Switch?
Yeah.
That's crazy.
From Stardew and kind of pulled me back into Darkest Dungeon, because I played that on PC and then on PS4, and now I'm playing it again on Switch. It's just awesome.
Is there anything new that pulled you back in on Switch? Or
there's no new mode. It's the game. It's just like out again on a system that I love and I'm using a lot. So
they've been supporting it since launch. Like if you played that game at launch, there's a bunch of new stuff from then, but the Switch version in particular doesn't have anything exclusive.
Yeah. Good match for a system though.
Yep.
Oh yeah. Yeah. Seems great on the Switch. All right, I think that's all the scoops we have for you this week. Remember, you can always reach us at the email address, gamescoop@ign.com. Want to send a very special happy birthday message to Overlord of the Superfans, Matt Jones. Happy birthday.
And happy birthday to you too, Damon.
Thanks, guys. Thank you, Justin. Thank you, Sam. My name is Damon. This is IGN Gamescoop, and we're out.
Have you ever watched a futuristic sci-fi movie and wondered, but wait, could any of this really happen? And will I live long enough to see it? That's what our show Hypothetical is about. I'm Carrie Bechet, and on this podcast, we ask what-if questions about the future. Like, what if we could read minds? What if the world's digital data was erased all at once? What would happen if the Yellowstone supervolcano erupted? Then we explore that question two ways, through speculative science fiction and through dialogue with brilliant scientists. The result is a genre-bending narrative that's interwoven with real facts provided by literal geniuses. And spoiler alert, a lot of the science fiction out there, it's not nearly as far-fetched as you might think. Come time travel with me into the future on Hypothetical. New episodes on Tuesdays, available on all your favorite podcast apps. Just search Hypothetical. That's H-Y-P-E-R-T-H-E-T-I-C-A-L.